This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live. I just got the thumbs up from Mark, our producer here on Pet Life Radio. You're here live with Dr. Jeff Werber, host for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff. Here for you, here for your pets. Any questions you may have, now's the time to get free advice. I'm trying to wave to everybody. So anyway, as you know, I like to first of all, you have to see this because you've seen my mugs before. I hope you can see this. And here it says, cat hair, don't care. And it's so funny. Because I hope you're seeing this because I'm seeing it backwards on Instagram. But how many times do I walk someplace and all of a sudden people comment, whether I'm coming from work or even at home, and they say, oh my God, look at you. What are you shedding? And I look at my shirt, I'm full of cat hair. And I don't even think about it. It's part of my wardrobe. I would feel naked if I didn't have animal hair all over me. So actually, that's a good thing. And also, by the way, I don't know how this happened. Here I am, I'm ready for the show. And my other sister, Bethany's on. My other sister, Jill, calls me and saying, wait, I just put on Do Not Disturb and took myself off cellular. How the heck did she get through? I think that's crazy because when it happens, it kind of affects sometimes the audio. So hoping that if you lose me on audio, I know Mark will tell me, but for you guys, you got on Instagram, you just got to have to give me a thumbs down or something or just say, hey, I can't hear you and we'll fix it. So we had a case this week. I'm going to post if I haven't posted the videos yet, but it was really strange. So you have a dog that comes in and it looked like we saw the mass on x-ray. So we do an x-ray. It looks like it was the spleen. The owners were sort of debating back and forth, 15, 13 and a half year old dog. Should we do surgery? Should we not do surgery? I mean, God, it's an older dog. I can understand if they didn't want to do it, but it was okay. They went to a specialist and they did an ultrasound, their own ultrasound. And they too agreed. They said, look, it doesn't look like it's involved in the liver. It doesn't look like it's involving the intestine. It looks like it's part of the spleen in that area. There's so few other tumors that can arise like that other than splenic if you can rule out the other things. The kidneys were good. So with that and the comfort level that we are going to be able to remove this tumor, they gave me the green light. So they come in and I'm ready for splenic mass. So typical, and I do these, as you know, all the time. So I'm opening up, I'm looking at the belly, the abdomen, and, I make my incision where I should for a splenic mass. And this thing was even much more caudal. I said, wow, must be the spleen is huge. And this is what we call the tail, the caudal tail of the spleen. So I extend my incision even further back. And finally, I can see this thing, feel it. It's rather large. And while I'm digging away, I follow the intestine to the spleen. And guess what? The spleen is there, totally normal, totally small. I mean, and I'm going, oh my God, we're into some deep, you know what now, because this thing was fixed deep. So anyway, bottom line is I was able to dissect it out and it was a really ugly thing. I have no idea what it is. Send it off for biopsy. I will report it. But that's what's so fun about what I do is that it's not all routine. Every animal is different. That's why, I have to explain sometimes to people, and you should know this too. You can have the companies that give us the drugs that we use always give us dose ranges. Now, why a dose range? Because every animal responds differently. Sometimes animals aren't going to respond to the low dose, need the high dose. Other animals, the high dose of the range is going to cause a problem and they need to drop down. I usually start at the middle. If it depending on the drug, sometimes I'll start at the lower end and slowly work up. You never want to start at the high end, at least I don't, unless you know the dog or the cat. So bottom line is you need to realize that because I've had clients before where I do everything by the book, low end or middle end dose range, especially with anesthetics. And all of a sudden they're calling and they're complaining that, oh my God, what did you give my dog? He's still not waking up. There's only so much we can do because there's no way to determine where your individual pet is going to lie on that range. So that's why I like to start middle to low, somewhere in the lower third, and see how we do. You can always give a little bit more, but once you give too much at the beginning, the high end of the dose range, then you can't get it out. You just got to wait it out. These dogs all do fine. These pets, cats, dogs all do fine. Just takes a little longer to come out. And there are just so many factors involved. So just know that, and I get this a lot, someone will call me and complain about someplace they've been, and I know that I would probably have done the same thing. There's no way to predict. It's a matter of being just patient, going into it, just know that there's no two animals are exactly alike. Now, maybe if you had, I mean, literally litter mates that are twins, they were in the same, coming out at the same time, same placenta, sharing the sac, literally twins, then maybe they could, yes, they could be pretty much the same. But you just got to be careful and be patient. And, you know, don't be afraid to ask. You know, always let your veterinarian know, because there may be some things like coming in, giving some fluids, something that might help it along. Some medications we have reversals that we can do. So, I mean, there are things we can do, but it's very important to just understand that not everything is going to be perfect all the time. And we do the best we can. You know, I look at it this way. Literally, I've done thousands of procedures and my complication rate is less than a tenth of a percent. It's so low, but it's not perfect. And like I say to somebody, you know, it's hard because it's a life. And I get it. I get it that it's so important to you, the pet parent. It is something, it's a living, breathing thing. But I will tell you this, that if you were in school, think back when you were in school, and let's say you got a 95 average. What grade are you going to get with a 95 average? You're going to get an A. I mean, that's pretty damn good. You keep that for your straight A's for the entire, you know, 4 years of school, whatever. And if you're in grad school, you're going to get your, you know, grad. If you're in college already, university, you're going to get into your grad school. If you're in high school, you're going to probably get into your Stanford, wherever the heck you want to go. But I mean, 5%, you kind of didn't do too well. So you missed 5% of those questions on that test. So just understand, there's no such thing as perfection. And anybody, it's like I say this, that anybody who says they've never had a complication, they're either lying or they don't do any surgery, because there's no way, no way. Even in the best of hands, I work with surgeons. I'm dealing with one right now where this guy, literally from Pennsylvania, I think he's in Pittsburgh, drove 3.5 hours to a board certified veterinary surgeon who I know who he is, and he's great reputation. I've heard him speak before, to do a surgery. Guy does the surgery. Guy dies back within days later on medication. The knee is major infection and he's going back and he's treating. I mean, the point is that even in the best of hands and the best of situations, the result may not be exactly what we want. So I guess part of the things that make us good is how do we respond? What do we do in that adversity? But you have to know one thing, that you got to let us know and don't not angry, because we're not perfect. And going into anything like that, when you have a major surgery, go ahead. Now, one of the things that I have with this particular case that you should know about, one of their hesitations was the fact the dog was already like 13 and a half, almost 14. Age is not a disease. We've discussed this many, many times. I can't tell you how many times I've done surgery on dogs, older dogs, that if I listen to the client, the owner, the pet parent, who said, I don't want to do it because he's so old, then that dog wouldn't be with us today. And here we are, months to years after the too old the dog or too old the cat, and they're doing great because of the surgery. So don't be afraid. All right. Questions. I want questions. So what do we got here? I've been doing a lot of waving. Thank you for all waving back. So what I'm going to do this morning, by the way, after the show, I'm doing my Talk Shop Live, and we're going to talk about some of my new products, which are great coming out. You can follow me. It's at Talk Shop Live. So you can go online. It's going to be some of the stuff that I do. Lepto, given in the rain. You know, look, where this question is coming from, and I can read it, that normally when we have lepto, it's people that are doing a lot of hiking. They're in the mountains, there are streams. You have these wild rodents that are shedding this bacterium, leptospirosis. Now with all the rain, there's a lot of runoff, and that runoff could be coming to our areas now, kind of like the coyotes are. So if you are below in those areas that are like sort of like, let's take Hollywood, for example, where you're close to the Hollywood Hills, there could be runoff. There are a lot of great hiking trails. You have Runyon Canyon. So if you are south below those areas, then it probably would be a good idea to talk to your veterinarian about lepto. We had a scare a couple of years ago, as many of you recall. I was really recommending it. The only new vaccine I'm recommending now, as a general rule, is the influenza, because of this respiratory bug that we've been dealing with, this respiratory canine infectious respiratory disease complex. So I am now kind of considering that like the Bordetella. It's core only because it's not kennel cough anymore. It's live in LA cough, go to the dog park cough, go to Runyon Canyon cough, go to Third Street Promenade cough. I mean, it's pretty much getting everywhere. So I think it would be a good idea just to keep that. Again, you want to talk to your veterinarian. But things like lepto, it's a great question, by the way. And if you live in those areas, let's put it this way. Is there a major downside to lepto? It used to be the reason why we didn't include it in all our basic vaccines is because the vaccine itself was, of all the vaccines that we gave, was the one that caused the most post-vaccine discomfort, pain, et cetera. So therefore, people didn't want to do it. And I didn't blame them. So if the risk was low, the risk of getting the disease was low, then I would say, yeah, go ahead and you could skip it, not to worry. Then that scare came up where it was in our backyard in Santa Monica Parks. We were seeing it. So anyone on the West Side should have been getting it, and we were giving it. That was about 2 years ago. So now I think that we're safe. I'm not recommending it. Let's put it this way. For that little dog that lives on the, if you know, Wilshire corridor, big high rises, dogs go down an elevator, go a little bit in area. Some of these have a little area, grassy area for their pets. And then you're going to go back upstairs. I'm not so worried about lepto. But if you are frequenting places like the parks, then it might not be a bad idea. And I will tell you that they have changed the formulation of the vaccine itself, the adjuvant, what it's made, the preservatives. We don't seem to get that same sort of untoward reaction to the vaccine itself. So you can at least proceed with caution, but at least know that it's there. Now, there was another question here. Traveling in an area where there was, do you change your vaccine protocols depending on where you are? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. One of my clients moving to the Northeast. So here, did we recommend the Lyme disease vaccine, Borrelia? No, never did. But there, absolutely. Flea and tick, pretty much everywhere. How about heartworm? Now, heartworm was something that we really didn't have a big problem here in Southern California, but it's becoming more of a problem. So what I recommend is, again, speak to your veterinarian. Is there a downside now with these new products that we have that are getting not flea, tick, heartworm, and NexGard Plus, flea, tick, heartworm, and intestinal parasites in one monthly chewable? It's not a bad idea. It's not going to hurt. Now, of course, if you're giving a preventive for heartworm for the very first time, and it's an adult dog over 5 months of age, you do want to go through and do a heartworm test first, because you don't want to have some of these medications can be, you get a weird reaction, more so the older ones, but it still can happen for many reasons. You want to make sure you're starting with a negative heartworm pet. So do that and understand when it comes to cats, there's very little treatment. So you want to make sure you're protecting against these. If you have an outdoor cat, especially, my cats are all indoors, which is why I always have so much hair on me. But if you want to be super safe, you should be, is go ahead, have your veterinarian test for heartworm. If it's negative, then yes, start preventive. I would highly recommend that. Now, another thing I recommend, because I don't know the prevalence of these diseases in certain areas, parts of the country, I always say, if you're going to be moving someplace, even as far as, you know, like close to LA, like San Diego, or up to San Francisco, call some local veterinarians, or if you have friends or relatives that live in those areas, which might be why you're moving, then call them and ask them to find out, does their veterinarian recommend these vaccines? And if they do, it would probably be smart to take care of those as well. And do it before your travel. For example, a heartworm, you already want to get. So I always tell people that you want to get there and get them on preventive before you travel. Otherwise, it might be too late. So start usually a month before your anticipated travel to these areas to make sure you're going to be safe. We are about to break and we're 18 minutes into the half hour. So when we come back, Red Apple has a question. Why does my neutered male, Franchi, lick the privates of his spayed Amstaff sister? And we'll talk about that when we come back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's get back to Red Apple's question. Why does my neutered male Frenchie lick the privates of his spayed MSF sister? So it's not always sexual. First of all, depending on how long he's been neutered. If he's been neutered for a long time, then it shouldn't be sexual anymore. So why do dogs hump? They hump because humping is not just a sexual maneuver. It's also a dominance maneuver. It lets them know that I'm the boss. My son just got adopted a new golden, who is the sweetest dog on the planet. And he shows me pictures of, he went to a dog park and some other dog started humping him. And Wheezy just sat there. He actually lied down and the other dog literally jumped on his back, almost like to hug him. And they sat there, he said, for probably 5 minutes, just sitting there. Wheezy didn't care. So it's a social thing. It is a dominance thing. It may not, don't always think it's sexual. Now, if I had a dog, knowing a dog is licking the privates a lot of a female, even if she's spayed, I would think maybe she has a urinary tract infection because there are certain odors that dogs relate and respond to that we can't smell, but there's something about it that he is attracted to. And it could be if there is some sort of infection. So I would, at the very least, run your analysis on the female, the Amstaff female, and make sure she doesn't have a bladder infection. Now, next up, what could it be? Why do dogs eat grass? Why do dogs, lick each other? They just like it. Obviously, we think it's disgusting, but it's something in their nature, and it could be nothing more than that. And the fact that she's letting him, he's just still doing it. There must be something there that is attracting him, whether it's an odor, whether it's a taste, it's hard to tell. And you might check her out. She might be 100% normal, 100% fine. And I would say, look, I wish we can ask your Frenchie, what is it about that disgusting behavior that attracts you? And if we can get an answer, that would be terrific. That would help me a lot in the future, talking to other people about why do they do that? But obviously, there's something about it that he likes. All right. Now, my 9-year-old Catahoula Mix has been going outside and eating grass. Oh, my God. I just talked about that. I didn't even see this question yet. Why do they eat grass? Now, $64,000 question for those of you who remember. Here's what it is. One of two things. Either, as some people say, they know that grass is going to make them vomit. They have an upset stomach. So they eat the grass so they can vomit. I like that. But here's my problem with that, is that when dogs eat something that makes them vomit within minutes, then we can use that, for example, for training called aversion behavior. Let's get them to dislike it immediately, do something, cause something they dislike immediately, and then they'll avoidance. So it's a form of aversion of avoidance. When they vomit from grass, it's usually 20 minutes, a half hour, an hour later. So they no longer make that association. So then they don't like vomiting. So what is it? So my feeling is that there are some benefits just to grass. First of all, it's high fiber. It's typically, if anyone of you have chewed on grass, they find it sweet. It might soothe their stomach a little bit because the fiber, not realizing that that same thing that they got an immediate pleasure and benefit now is going to make them vomit down the road. So they keep doing it because they're not making the association. So I would understand it is letting you know that there's, and also grass is a lot of moisture. So it could be that they just really are thirsty. I mean, my Labrador, not always, but if he's, for sometimes he'll go out there and he'll start chomping on grass. I don't know why. And for many dogs, they eat it and they don't vomit. It passes through. So the aversion avoidance therapy, I just don't think that's it, because it doesn't, A, for many, it doesn't make them vomit. And B, when it does, it's too far away from the ingestion of the grass in the first place. So for those of you who know, those of you who are part of the tribe, Passover, it starts tomorrow night. So I wish all of you a very happy Passover. Usually they coincide with Easter, literally within the same week. But in the Jewish calendar, there's no, when leap year, we have one also, but it's not a day, not February 29th. It's an entire month. And it happens every 3 to 4 years. So therefore, everything is pushed back. So this year and for the next couple of years, Passover is going to be way, way after Easter. All right. But historically, for those of you who don't know, the famous Last Supper painting is a Passover Seder. And that's why, if you look at the way they're looking at each other and that glance that they talk about in the art history. Anyway, that's a Passover Seder. So as far as the grass, I hope that answers your question. And this is one of the other things also. We always, when we talk about pet behavior, it's not like we can sit the dog or the cat or the animal on the couch and get them nice and comfy and then start having a conversation with them. Okay, tell me about your past. Tell me what is it about this behavior or this that you think is causing? We can't do that. So the best we can do is just evaluate based on, you know, we always talk about that we should be cautious when it comes to anthropomorphizing. That's anthropomorphizing is putting our own values into our pet's brain. So we expect them to think like we think. So when we do some weird behavior and we know what causes it, we are extrapolating and thinking, well, it must be the same for our pets. And that's how we go about treating. But guess what? We could be totally wrong. All right, let's talk about some other anthropomorphizing that we've done that turned out not to be so great. All right, grain-free. There is not a single scientific publication that is sort of verified and that will tell us that grain is bad for dogs. And yet, because of anthropomorphizing, we say that grain is not good for dogs. And what's happened, for whatever reason, we don't even understand the mechanics. No one's been able to prove anything one way or the other, but the incidence of cardiomyopathy is on the rise. And the highest percentage of those animals are on grain-free diets. So again, we can just extrapolate. It makes logical sense that, wow, if we're seeing more cardiomyopathy in dogs, which is usually a cat disease based on lack of taurine in the diet, which is why cats are obligate carnivores. They have to have meat. That's where the taurine is coming from. It's also added to all diets. And even when taurine was added to the grain-free diets, it still didn't help. So there is something else, probably, again, we're just guessing, that something else that in the diets that we are adding instead of grains, whether it's legumes, whether it's the peas, whether it's lentils, who knows, is contributing to this rise of cardiomyopathy. So again, we don't know. Now, let's talk about vegan vegetarian. I love that one. Can a dog be a veggie? Yes. Can it be vegan? Yes. It's a challenge. But does the dog want to be a vegan? Does the dog want to be a vegetarian? Well, I say to anyone who is pushing for that, now, you can have whatever beliefs you want, but don't put it on your pets. Because if you gave them the choice and you put a bowl of meat or your best veggie meal in front of your dog, put it both side by side, see which one he goes after. If he goes after the veggie, then great. Now you can do it. But if he goes after the meat, which he probably will, then you just have to say, okay, I have one feeling for me, but that doesn't mean my dog or my cat has to have the same belief. Because then you could be negatively affecting them, and that may not be good. So I always, again, exercise with caution. I say proceed with caution and think about, who am I really pleasing here? Is it just to please me or is it to please my pet? Who's more important to be pleased? Is it me? So you feel good about it that my dog is eating a veggie diet, doesn't love it, but he's eating it. That's okay. Or give him something he really wants. You know, we always say that positive reward is a better way to train. So why are you punishing your dog for not doing anything wrong? So if he really wants to eat meat, let him eat meat. Come on, it doesn't mean you have to eat meat. So, all right, let's see. Ah, try to source your piece. So there we go. That's a little piece of information that can be huge. So we know that dogs lick their wounds. And this is an area where if it's a big mastiff, I don't know if she can get to it, but your Frenchie certainly can. So now here's the chicken and egg. Is that boil there because the Frenchie's doing so much licking, caused an irritation, and therefore the boil has arisen? Or was the boil there for some reason because of an infection, a skin infection, a urinary tract infection? And again, they put out a different scent and even a different taste. So who's going back to the scene of the crime? Not her, not she herself, because she can't, but the Frenchie, the brother, the housemate, is doing it for her. And which is probably why, if she is allowing it to happen, it's not bothering her. It actually may be helping her feel good because she can't get there herself. So I would say that definitely want to have it seen. You want to rule out infection, a urinary tract infection, and possibly, if anything else, is a skin infection or a lesion or a growth that needs to be addressed. So you need to see the vet and take care of that. That's important. The boy was there before the licking, in which case then he's licking because of the boil. It's emitting some kind of odor, some kind of taste. We'll never smell it. We'll never taste it. I hope not. So he is telling you that there is something there. It needs to be addressed. And there you go. Medicare, yesterday she wants to be active. Yes, if it's 5 days post-spay, I'm glad she's doing great. Yes, you can go ahead and start. I mean, just ease her into it. Here's the thing. it was still a major abdominal surgery. There's a lot of healing that still needs to take place. It usually takes about 14 days to be completely healed. So after 5 days, I'm glad she's feeling great, glad that she wants to do all these things, but we need to put on the brakes for her because she doesn't understand that. I know you feel great. It's wonderful that you feel great, but you're not ready to be full speed. So if you want to take her for a little walks now, it'll be a little bit more active. That's okay. But no dog parks yet. Wait till after 2 weeks, totally. All right, guys. I am so happy you joined me today here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. You can get a hold of me. You know how to get a hold of me. And I will be here next week. Again, same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio, on Instagram Live. If you have any questions during the week, please get a hold of me on Instagram or Pet Life Radio, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com, Instagram Werbs underscore DBM, or just put in Jeff Werber, and I will be happy to help you out. And otherwise, just have a good week. Those of you, again, celebrating, have a wonderful Passover, have great Seders, and Mark, that goes to you too. And we will see you next week. All right, have a good week. Bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.